Hello, everyone. My name is John Shad, and you're listening to the UFO Podcast with my good friend, Dwayne Logan.
Hello.
Dwayne Logan, everyone. This camera right here.
Oh, okay. I got this light blasting in my eye. That's my glass eye, too. This one's made of rubber. Sometimes it falls out and bounces down the street, and I got to chase it. It's really embarrassing.
Yeah, I've seen it in public, especially at the DMV.
Oh, yeah, they love that.
Worst case scenario, yeah.
Is that your eyeball going down the aisle?
So we've talked about you being an artist in Europe, and you did pretty well for yourself. And there was, I believe, 5 albums, the 5th, which did not get finished.
Right.
Because you were going through, you know, some family issues and, you know, if you don't mind me kind of working through this, your mother was sick.
Yep.
And that sort of prompted everything to a big standstill. You weren't under a contract, so you paid all the contractors, you know, the music guys, the studio guys. So everyone walked away happy. I mean, except for you, who had to deal with, you know, your mother essentially being sick.
Yes.
With liver cancer.
Terminal.
And, you know, going through these experimental procedures with the doctor you met from Scandinavia, mm-hmm. I believe, right? That you met in Texas. And through all that, it was a very hard time for you to even explore anything artistically. I mean, granted, for anyone it would be.
Emotionally, mentally, I was dead, you know?
Yeah.
Anybody who's lost a relative, a friend that they really love and care about, knows this aspect, that it's just sometimes easier to just pick up the baggage and go, I got to reset myself or refine myself or rediscover myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the mode I was in.
Yeah. And through all that, you know, losing that artistic edge, I guess you can say, you started building in the States generator trucks.
Yep.
And
how do you get to generator trucks for music? You plug them in and they run.
Well, let's talk about that too, because did you just want to not deal with the music stuff at all at that point? Or did you see it? Did you ever? I mean, I'm sure you saw yourself eventually getting back to it.
I mean, my mom loved my music. You know, of course, she had no taste in music. Just kidding, Mom. But I really thought I would get back to it in time. And I had worked with a lot of great people I wanted to work with again, and avenues I wanted to explore with music. But I just, you know, people say musicians bear their souls. Well, so do authors. So do cameramen, DPs, direct photography.
Yeah.
I just wasn't ready to bear much more than I'd already bared.
Of course. Right. And then the generator trucks, that sort of got your foot in the door for the entertainment industry here in California, in Hollywood.
Yep.
And through that was the very, very beginnings of the first machine you built. And you were renting generator trucks to, what was that show out in Malibu?
It was a show called The Journeys of Alan Strange.
The Journeys of Alan Strange.
Yeah.
Do you remember how you got on that?
I think a gentleman we knew who was a old-time special effects specialist knew about the show, and he says, well, they got a... I'm trying to remember. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, no worries.
But he says, you know, they need a generator out there in Malibu. And he says, you can take it out there if you want for me. You know, I'll go send one of my people with you and just watch how we do it. So I think that was how it happened. Again, yeah. I was just kind of like, Mama just died. The family was going nuts, you know, and I was trying to find, where am I going through all of this? So I was open to ideas. And
And those circumstances helped lead you to, getting possession of the first machine. Right?
Yeah.
So you end up out there in a generator truck, and they need a flying saucer, I think you said.
They had a flying saucer they wanted to help rise up out of a water tank or a cistern or something.
During the shop.
Yeah. And I'd been working heavy equipment through my dad's involvement in machinery and building and stuff for years since I was a kid. And so the idea of, you know, lifting something, just lifting it up in the air was not a big deal. And when I saw the spacecraft come out of the water going, yeah. It was just, it took away so much baggage of hurt a frustration, is mom going to live or die? And so for the moments I could be out there bringing that flying saucer out of the water, I go, this is cool. It made all the bad, a lot of the bad go away.
Yeah, it's somewhat liberating. You know, I've driven the latest UFO machine,
yep.
The newest one we have, the UFO-X, that you dubbed it. I know exactly what you mean. You know, when you're picking these loads and contributing to the arts.
Right.
You know, although it is a piece of heavy equipment, you know, it's gritty, it's ugly, it's not pretty. It's not like how you
Wait
see it
minute.
On the screens, but man, when it's there's a fulfillment of the soul almost.
Yeah.
I don't know how else
feel
to explain
useful.
It. Right.
You know.
Yeah. And that first machine that you had on that show to pick that UFO up, you didn't think anything of it. You just wanted to help contribute to the film.
Yeah, right? I didn't even ask to get paid. I mean, I knew how to run cranes by that time. My dad had a couple of cranes. So it was just like more family stuff. The thing is the timing. Mom was gone. The estate was worth money. And people that had no ethics or morals or values were trying to steal all they could. Some of you folks, I'm sure, have been through that experience. A relative, a loved one dies. And suddenly people you thought were really moral and ethical turned out to show their worst sides. And I don't mean they're assholes. That's what you wind up seeing. But there's no good that comes out of it. So it was wonderful to do something different. I could just contribute. I was under supervision, you know. Yeah, it's fun.
And at that moment, you discovered the idea of the Rotec, as you named it.
Right.
So this machine that you sort of just wanted to help a friend out, help a production.
Yeah.
Help them out with whatever they needed help with. Mm-hmm. And then you had the idea of like, well, why don't I just keep doing this silly stuff? Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you were probably like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, yeah. To build anything from things that weigh 50,000 pounds to 20,000 pounds, like, are we stupid or what? Yeah, but it's fun.
Yeah. So coming from music and going through the heartbreak of losing your mother, that sort of going back to your roots helped you grieve in a
yeah.
way.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I everything, you know, raised as a Native American, you know, by my mom's family, and you just don't go running around showing your emotions easily. But when it's somebody who's like family, it's easier to show how you feel, but you never let them see the whole thing because you don't want them thinking, well, I'm a native who can't hold my tears, and, you know, whatever, you know. But it was liberating, and I was very grateful for the opportunity. So, Bob, thank you very much. And that's how the guy that, you know, we did the crane
yeah,
first
we
thing
never,
together.
We never mentioned him, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, thanks to him, probably none of this would have happened, huh?
It's fair to say. It's
yeah.
fair to say.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You know how someone's suggestion can just change the entire outline of your life, you know?
Yeah.
And in a way, it was therapeutic for you. When you took that machine back after that job, did you just get straight into just like, okay, I'm going to start modifying this particular machine to go straight into the film industry?
You don't just repurpose machines unless you're really, really smart. And I had smart people around me. I was the main dummy. I just had the money.
Yeah.
And I relied on brilliant people to make it all work well. And I hired professionals, crane experts, one of the most famous crane designers in the United States. She's designed some incredible, just special machines. And he was the first advisor to the project. And slowly, after about a good year, 2 years of research, we began to create what was called the Rotac, which is Rough Operation Terrain Aerial Crane. Mm. And our first job was on the movie Gone in 60 Seconds with Nick Cage, Angelina Jolie, and the gaffer was Jeff Morrell.
Let's not get too ahead right now. So you spent a year building this machine.
And it's a couple of years,
give
actually.
Give or take, right?
So yeah.
It took a while.
It took a while.
You know, a lot of moving
We didn't
parts.
Build it. The whole thing.
Right. You needed
the fact,
state certifications.
Yes. Yes.
Blueprints.
Everything. Yes.
Right.
Engineering drawings, had to have a state inspector. So everything was done proper. Everything was overdone.
That takes time. You know,
just wanted to be a really reliable piece of equipment.
Definitely. And in doing so, you finished it, right?
Yeah.
And once you finished it, what do you do? You just go up to someone like, all right, it's done.
Hey, you
want to try it?
I got a crane in my trunk and I washed it. You want to take a look at it?
Yeah. I think as me and you know, it's a little hard to showcase a machine of that scale. It's, you know, it's large.
Well, we found a way to do it. And,
Tell us about that.
So what the deal is, I used to run track or the track at Cal State Northridge with a friend of mine. And his family owned the Mole Richardson Lighting Company,
down in Hollywood, right?
Yeah, which was the oldest lighting company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to do a favor for my friend. And I says, one day I might come looking for a favor, so if you could help me, I'd sure appreciate not forgetting me.
Yeah.
You know, time goes by. We got this Rotac built, you know, all custom parts. We didn't repurpose anything. Everything was new construction except for ideas and some hydraulic aspects, because we weren't sure about what we wanted to do with the hydraulics until we put it under load and tested it. Okay, so we get this job. Oh, yeah. So I needed to have lights to demonstrate it. So I went to...
have a movie without lights.
Yeah, really? So I went to one of the Mole family, you know, Larry Parker, and he arranged that I could... They were going to get me some lights, do it all the proper paperwork and everything, because I didn't know what the paperwork was for someone for lights. And we're out there in Universal lot. We're up where the lighting dock used to be, and the trams would go down, and they'd pass by Spielberg's compound on the left. And so we had, for the first time, we had basically, I think, 6 18Ks, which is 6 18,000-watt lights, mole lights, big, heavy lights, full extension, full down, and... this golf cart, a couple of golf carts came up, and one guy we didn't recognize, and the next golf cart we recognized everybody, and we're going, it's Ron Howard, you know? And so the trams had gone by, and the arm is out, it's lowered.
This wasn't on the back lot of Universal Studios.
Yeah, by the sound stages. And people are taking pictures thinking like this is part of the ride. We go, I think they think this is part of the ride. Well, charge them something, you know, screwing around. And so here comes a whole crew of guys, and they say, what the hell is this? I go, it's the Rotac. What does that mean? Rough operation terrain, aerial crane, la, la, la. And I'll go to sleep now. So we got hired, and then we're doing a motion picture, and we've got these lights up in the air. And every time
let's talk about that really quick. You know, you were showcasing those 6 18Ks,
yeah,
and you know, your full stick out.
Yeah,
I mean, I would imagine about like 12 degrees, and that reach at that time was
pretty much unheard of.
Yeah, and I'm sure you were able to get a guy in the basket, and they can move these lights around
manually,
to control the light with ease of movement. And the accessibility you had in that range was something that, again, that was just unheard of.
Hadn't been seen yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they wanted you on a show.
Yeah. They hired us. And
how did that happen? Was it because you saw Ron Howard that day, right?
We saw him the day that you saw the machine. Yeah.
But that was not your first job, was not with on a Ron Howard film.
There's been so many jobs and so many firsts of jobs. I get a little confused on some of this.
Well, it was Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Because we'd already done Grinch previously.
Oh, so Grinch was your first job.
Grinch was our first job.
So Ron Howard and his crew decided to take a chance on you
guys. They took a chance on us,
that day that they saw you on the back lot of Universal Studios.
Yes. And then they were so happy with our results, thank God, we wind up getting to work with them on Gone in 60 Seconds.
Well, let's not brush over Grinch here, a pretty big show. I mean,
it was.
Tell us about that.
Well, to me, like, you know, I'm a fantasy fan. You know, I'm into, you know, how do they make, you know, an elephant fly? You know, how do you have a Nautilus submarine in the 1800s? you know, that's atomic powered, but they haven't even invented the word yet.
Yeah.
So I love technology. I love that there are people that struggle and put everything into trying to make it work out. And so they contribute something. Some are motivated by just entirely money. Money is important, but satisfaction, you know, personal satisfaction is also important to grow, to learn. And so we were hired for Gone in 60 Seconds. We're up in Monrovia off Rosemead Boulevard. And every time we would move the arm, the gaffer, Jeff Morrell, Mr. Morrell, would say, you know, okay, now move here, now move there, now go here, now go there. There'd be multiple shadows as these beams of light came through these giant palm trees or pine trees. And somebody on the radio production radio goes, oh my gosh, it looks like there's a UFO up there.
Well, that was on, that was in San Gabriel.
Yes.
In a residential neighborhood.
Yes, but also down in San Pedro where they stole some of the story, the cars in the storyline.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because again, when you first had the machine out there, you had it named the Rotac.
The Rotac.
And I can
Sounds
see why.
Like a suppository. Oh, take one Rotac at night.
I can see why I didn't catch on. So, I mean, everyone's got their own, you know, being on these locations, everyone sort of, they create their own lingo. Mm-hmm. So if you're in that, around those kinds of guys, they all have, you know, their own lingo.
Yeah.
And Rotac was not one of them.
No. What the hell is a Rotac? Take one before bedtime if you're constipated. Yeah.
So the whole crew was just like, oh, wow, looks like a UFO coming through the trees, the lights,
yeah,
the beams of lights.
And yeah, so and I was, I'm sorry.
No, and then that's how the UFO, the yeah. term UFO was coined.
Yeah, and I threw away all the stationery and business cards that said Rotac. And it became the UFO.
That's pretty cool. And were you upset about that?
Well, I had a couple thousand pieces of stationery. It was embossed and engraved. It was good stuff. And I'm thinking, I hope I get a job from this, you know. And Mr. Morrell has just been an inspiration. His crew is incredible. I would work for Jeff anywhere, anytime.
Yeah. And, all right, yeah. Yeah, he's a really unique guy. You know, most of these guys like him are sort of, you know, disappearing.
They're retiring out. Their kids are growing up, you know, and yeah, they want to do something else. The whole, there's a lot of changes going on in the industry. We're looking for the best for it for everybody.
Yeah. So you end up getting jobs with this new UFO.
Yep.
Gone in 60 Seconds. Grinch.
Yep.
You end up doing what? Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible.
Yep.
2 and 3.
Yep.
What other film? There's
we got
a lot
to
of
go
films.
To New Zealand with John Woo for Last Samurai. That was incredible.
How did you get the machine there?
Oh, they took it on a ship. We were already in Hawaii, you know, on a film for John Woo.
You've been to Hawaii as well with that machine, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
A couple of times. Windtalkers.
Always by ship.
Always
well,
by ship.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, how else do you get it there?
Well, we built a giant rowboat, and we had some paddles and stuff, but it takes so long to get there that way. So we put it under the... I know, I'm a smart ass. We put it under the decks, and away we go.
Jeez.
And Zane Wiener, he was executive producer, and Zane was a great guy to work for, and Scott Robinson was wonderful. The whole crew was awesome.
You would go on the ship with the machine?
No. We would make sure it got loaded safely and they had the proper points to secure it so it was safe. Because if you hit rough storms, you don't want your crane crashing to the side of the ship and going to the bottom of the ocean. That's kind of embarrassing. Well, the crane got lost at sea. How do you lose a crane? It fell out of my pocket. You know, I don't know.
You'd meet them from port to port?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, at the ports?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. That's pretty crazy.
It was fun, though.
You know, driving a big machine like that.
Jeez. Yeah, it was great.
How much time did you spend in Hawaii with that machine?
Well, they had us there a couple of days in advance doing location scouts to make sure we can get the machine where they wanted it. As long as everything was safe, we were able to deliver to them what they wanted. And we did a couple of other shows with John Woo, another Mission Impossible. And again, but the last Samurai was the most incredible film, I think, I've ever worked on in my life.
Was that your favorite one?
just because of the history involved, they actually built, they built, I think, maybe 4 or 5 blocks of downtown Tokyo circa 1870s. And you could go up to a shopkeeper and open up his little cabinet drawer. And every drawer, there was something they put in there that he would pull out as a prop. So you buy this, you know, whatever. And just the detail and the production designers and the crew, everybody was just impeccable. The actors were awesome. Loved it. It's been the high point of my life.
That was one of the first films where you got to fly a camera overhead, right?
Yes.
There was a whole rig built up. And I'll link some photos down.
Okay.
Right below in the description. People can check this out. And there's actually video of the old machine driving around.
I think
in Hawaii.
Okay.
And I don't think New Zealand, but there's a lot of footage of that. I'll upload it.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I'll put a link down below so you guys can check it out. And I'll also tap in our Instagram account for the new machine. Since this is the
UFOX.
The UFOX is the new machine.
X for extra. Oh, wait, that's another pose for a TV show. Anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole thing about being part of UFO on a production is, you know, we're essentially prototypers. And because of that, you were able to help the production out. The grips, if they ever wanted to rig anything on the machine, you know, making any modifications to accommodate different rigs, you were able to do that.
If we have enough time, like, we're never going to get into a situation that cannot be done safely and intelligently. There's no point in that. It's dangerous otherwise.
Right.
But to do what you're saying, yeah. I mean, again, we feel like we're really being supportive. I mean, as vendors, our job is to supply the equipment. To me, also in my mind, my heart, as a vendor, is to make a difference, to make their life easier, to make the producers feel they really got their money's worth, so they want to hire us again, and to be a part of that collaborative effort, to create something that's really cool, and people are going to go, yeah, I'm glad I went to that movie. That's where it's at for me. You know, Jeff Webster, we got to do some shows for Mandalorian, and he's the consummate, you know, gaffer. He said, okay, I want you to move really, really slow, do this. And he had us do things nobody's ever asked us to do. But it was no problem because we already pre-planned that somebody's going to want to do this. Let's build it into the system. And then when we do it, they go, oh, it does that too? We go, yeah. They go, oh.
Yeah, I mean, being a part of the new UFO, the UFO as we know it today, which is a completely different machine from the first one that was on Gone in 60 Seconds, is its versatility and it's the way it's capable to move these large grids and platforms in a really smooth way, you know, and slowing it down and speeding it up. I don't even know how to describe it. It's
well, there was one amazing show. Thank you. We pay him thousands of dollars a minute to say this stuff. Now, we got to do this one show in Hawaii, and they wanted to get they want us to come flying down and catch up to a Rolls Royce that one of the cast was in.
Yeah.
And so we had to get him down there, and they got him all hooked up and stuff. We brought him down, and he's just kind of like moving his legs, you know, above the ground. Then we just land him in and match the car speed. And it was just—it was a real graceful shot. It was a beautiful shot. And going, man, we got to do this again sometime.
Yeah, and what—that was with the first machine.
Yes.
Yeah. At what point did you muster up the idea of putting a camera crane on the new UFO?
Well, I've always been very camera sensitive. My dad built some camera bodies and some tripods for Ansel Adams. And then my dad was actually developing a camera for Howard Hughes. And Mr. Hughes made it possible because aluminum was hard to get during the war. And Mr. Hughes made that happen. And my dad loved taking pictures. So to me, things that endure, the pictures of Ansel Adams, you know, just to be able to say, I've got a camera system that can allow you to have shots you have not yet envisioned without it being CGI, but we can do it live in camera, you know. It's an incredible thing to be part of that process of giving ideas to people, and they go, that's not bad. Can we try and do this? And you just feel like, you feel like you're helping support people, you know, and you're working with everybody else. It's no longer us against them or some petty thing. It's just like we're all part of the same team, and we just want to be in that process.
Right.
Yeah. And,
well, it was, I believe you were building the Mars Lander, right? You began developing, you retired the first machine, and you wanted to get into a camera car.
Yeah.
Essentially with a mobile base that can carry heavy loads.
Yeah.
Right? And tell us about that.
I'm not going to give away too much about it because I still would love to get back to it.
Yeah. Well, but, no, don't tell us much about the Mars Lander, but tell us how you began a project and deviated from it. And now we know the UFOs. We know it today.
Okay. So I still don't quite understand the question.
Deviate. So Mars Lander, right?
Yep.
You started to build it, or at least the drawing board, back to the drawing board.
Back to the drawing board.
Getting platform, you know, figuring things out.
Right.
And then you went to, I think, a production office, and someone gave you the idea of putting a camera crane on there. I think it was John Toll.
Mr. Toll. We're doing, when we had the honor of being with Mr. Toll on Last Samurai, he'd been watching how he could move the lights, and one day he says, can you put a camera on there? I go, well, all depending. It wasn't built to be a total precision machine. It was just built to put your lights in position and drive the lights over here, over there, over there. And he goes, well, here's the shot I'd like. Do you think you can do it? I says, well, it won't be precise, but it'll be, if this kind of movement is acceptable, which is all smooth. It's just a matter of if he wanted to come to stop real fast, I had to prepare for that kind of thing. Fortunately, it was a very, very quick shot. We were in front of the samurai army. We were from the samurai warriors attacking the Japanese army on the hill. And we had to drop in front of them and then go out. And we were never close to horses or the wranglers at all, the stuntmen. But it looked really good. It looked nobody could tell what we were doing.
Yeah.
And so when they look at the shot and we explain how we did, they go, you guys did that? Oh, yeah. And the whole motivator was Mr. John Toll and David James. You know, he says, you know, if we could do some of this, even though I'm the still photographer, I'm not the DP, it'd be an interesting look. I go, all I can do is just do what they tell me to do, and I'll work at that, you know. But David James, Mr. John Toll, these guys are great.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by, you know, people that do that for a living. And when they come around the UFO, they realize that they're able to do certain things they weren't allowed to do before because of the range of motion. They just have that gritty, that passion. It just comes out. Like, can you do this? Like, more, you know?
Dean Cundey.
And being able to contribute to that, man, it's awesome to be able to say that, we were able to do what they asked. Because it's really, it's complex, you know, down to the math, to, you know, the hydraulics and the computers.
Computerization.
There's a lot involved.
Computer expert here.
And just for someone to say, well, can you just move it up a little or over there? Yeah. Yeah, we can.
It looks so big and so heavy.
It is.
But it's like a dancer. It's like a ballet dancer.
Right.
It's light on its feet.
And it really, every single moving part on a production is essential, you know, down from the riggers to the writers, the directors, the DPs, the coordinators, the production coordinators. It's definitely a team effort, you know, although sometimes if you're there every day, it doesn't feel like it or seem like it. Everyone does have an essential key role in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you with the original UFO, you were that's Hollywood prime. I mean, we're talking Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible 2, Mission Impossible 3, Last Samurai, Grinch.
Pearl Harbor, a John movie. Yeah.
Pearl Harbor. Which one was the one in Hawaii?
The
Native Americans.
We only got to, we did some of the. Wow. Okay. Well, now I'm thinking of Wind Talkers.
That Wind Talkers. Okay. You know
what we did? What we got to participate with in L.A. was when they had the fight scene, the bar scene, and we did it in Malibu.
For what film?
Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor, okay. Yeah, I mean, this was during a time where CGI was not the norm. Green screens was not the norm. You know, during this time, we're talking Star Wars Episode One, where that entire movie was just green screened, and people didn't like it.
Yeah.
For whatever reasons. But that...
Oh, that's why I was doing this.
It just almost seems like it was a different time in filmmaking as opposed to today. There's been something that is just not there anymore. But it is. But it's almost like it's repressed. I don't know how to explain it.
You know, like, I don't want to knock anything.
Don't.
There's so much new technology, which is revolutionary.
Yeah.
And there's so many incredibly talented people that will be able to make use of it. What I look forward to, and I'm sure the same thing for you, bro, is we get to participate in making those visual dreams a reality. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we definitely have. Right on, bro. Well, I think we'll conclude this episode of... All right. Dwayne's got something to say.
Now, we have stuff here, if you like. It's UFO hat. It's all leather. This is all embroidered. This glows in the dark.
Hold it up higher. There you go.
We got hats. We got coffee mugs. Excuse me. Sorry about that. We've got, where is it, the flight jackets?
Right there. It's right there on the
UFO. Oh, that's another one. Oh, yeah, this one's really great. If you guys want a UFO flight jacket, just let us know. We can make it up for you. And when, you know, as silly as it seems, how many people can say, like, they see the jacket and they go, UFO, you actually, do you, and here it is, because it says UFO recovery team. Do you actually go and recover UFOs? They go, well, if I tell you, I'd have to kill you. And it's just fun. You know, it's all in good fun, tongue in cheek.
Dwayne gets a real good kick out of it. All right, everybody. Well, I think we'll say bye to the people. And anything else you want to add, Dwayne?
I want to thank you all very much for watching our presentations. We hope you come back to us. And if you have any questions, any comments, most comments, we'd love to hear from you. So all the very best. Have a great weekend and be safe.
All right, everyone. You're listening to the UFO Podcast, and we'll catch you next time.